Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Naked Englishman podcast. I'm Richard Vobes. This is the audio diary, etc., etc. It's the 19th of February 2026, and it's just coming up to 7 o'clock. Yesterday, I had a bit of trouble with the internet. I've got two lots of internet now. I've got one on a little dongle thing which we take to the land. It's very convenient and handy so that I can have access if I need to. And I have a little unit that somebody sent me, which is very generous of them, that has a little pay-as-you-go card in it. And that pay-as-you-go card, the data ended. It was very frustrating because I'd paid for what I thought was a lot longer, for like 3 months, and it seems that it was only 1 month. Anyway, it had to top it up. It wasn't very easy to top up, so I had to go down into town to the shop, one of these telephone shops, the one that was providing the service, and they said, oh yes, yes, we can do it, just bring in the SIM card. I thought, oh, right. So I came back, got the SIM card, went back again, and then they faffed about, took some money off me, because I said, look, I want an unlimited thing. I don't want one of these just so many, you know, gigs a month. I need unlimited because I'm a YouTuber uploading videos left, right and centre. And you know, we like to watch the odd film and catch up with various things. I've got email to send and people send attachments, all that kind of stuff. So I said, no problem. Anyway, they gave me a price which was cheaper than what it was online. So I said, oh, well, I'll have that then. They said, yeah, no problem. So they took the money and then they turned around and said, ah, we can't actually do it. I said, well, all right, I'll have a refund. Ah, we can't actually refund you. It's like, what do you mean you can't refund me? You can't just take my money and then say we're not going to give you the service and not refund me. Well, you'll have to ring up the customer service. I said, oh, the whole point of coming to the shop was so that I can speak to a human rather than bloody customer service automated, you know, stuff. And they said, no, if you ring this number, you'll get through to a human. Oh, okay. Anyway, I did get through to somebody called Mohammed in Scotland. He was very nice. He sorted it out and away we go. So that was, but it did take a while, and then it was a while before I could get the new dude up. I did get it up yesterday. And it was sometime in the afternoon. I assume that people, because you don't get this sent to you, you have to go looking for the Naked Englishman. I assume that people probably missed it because you probably looked in the morning and went, oh, he hasn't done one. There is one there. Anyway, I'm not saying it was worth all the effort to go and get it. It's just me burbling on about life, the universe and everything. But there you go. But so this morning I thought, well, I'll try and make the effort to get one up by, well, you know, I like to have them up by 9 o'clock so that if you're looking for the new dude, it's usually done by then. And usually, if I haven't got one up by 9 o'clock, there ain't going to be one. But sometimes there's an exception to that. But anyway, that's all the mechanics behind the scenes that you really didn't need to know about. But there it is. Yesterday, we didn't go to the land. We'd been to the land for a few days, which was so lovely. So lovely to be there and look at the wet the wet ground and the water trickling down the thing. But it was drying slowly. And then we had rain yesterday, so I dare say the place is now back to being a quagmire. These bastards in the sky, the cabal and that lot who are orchestrating the chemtrailing and are really targeting the farmers now because they really want to damage the crops, which they have done very admirably, and food shortages will be coming. We get Riverford's stuff, and Guy Watson, the founder of Riverford's, writes a little note with the veg each time. And last week when we had it, his note was saying, yes, everything's wet, but the growers are okay, the food looks like it's going to be all right. Then this week, his note said, I made a mistake. I wasn't able to talk to all the growers and what have you. And he said, because he gets a lot of stuff from overseas, which is a shame, but of course, things like oranges and lemons and things you can't really grow in significant numbers for the Riverfords, if you can grow them at all. He said, no, lots of crops have failed thanks to the rain. And in a way, it's like news from the front, really. You know, you can see that if they're failing and they've got loads of customers and they are delivering straight to the customer, not to shops, although some shops have it, actually, little shops. We've got a little shop on the way to where we found a new little post office. They have, I think it was there or somewhere.
Yeah, it was a Riverfords organic campaign.
But they're not supplying supermarkets. If they are, you know, I don't think they are. Their customer, they just go straight to the customer, which is great, you know, and that's what farmers should do, basically, and just get out of the whole supermarket thing. But they're failing. And so as a result of that, we can see that the bastards that are spraying the skies and causing weather control, which has been going on, you know, people will argue, say, oh, there's no such thing. Well, there is. The patents are out there. It's blatantly obvious.
Look up geoengineering.
Yeah, geoengineering. You'll find it all. We know it's going on. And now they're really hammering us. They hammered us last year, but not quite as bad as this year. And I remember it last year because I was writing about the weather as I was writing my book. And I was kind of writing it in real time because I wanted to give, even though it was a fictional account of Biggleswick, I wanted to give an account of what was going on during the winter and early spring. And this is even worse than what was going on last year. And we knew they were going to wind it up. So I hope people have got some food in storage or have started to sort of save, you know, tins of things, because when the shelves go empty, then people will be rather upset. So be prepared. So Riverfords were complaining of whole crops failing. So that's interesting. That's very interesting. However, as ever, I am still optimistic for the general outcome. But I think as we get nearer to it, and I think we are getting nearer to it, we will see a lot more disaster for people as the monster is throwing his toys out the pram and, you know, just cutting his nose off to spite his face, even though he's dying, and it will die. Things will get better, but we are still in the fire and we're not out yet for a while. And this is where, you know, really the only way to cope with it is that we need, as I repeat many, many times, we need more farmers, small scale farmers, who aren't relying on massive fields of stuff and are farming in a different way, not just on flat ground, but farming with other techniques, such as hugelkultur and the other one that is, you know, the one that you do it by the moon. All these different methods, the electroculture, all these different things. Lots of people doing that, and the surplus being spread around, not the fields, but to people, obviously. I think people are incredibly naive to think that food will just continually be there, because it has been. And you know, we'll just go to takeaway, we'll just go to fast food outlet, we'll just go to Sainsbury's or wherever, because we always assume that food will be there. And of course, you only have to go back not so many years. That's the cat clawing on the furniture. You only have to go back not that many years to realise just how food was one of the biggest commodities that you spent your money on out of your wages. And people didn't eat the way they eat now. They just stuffed their faces with utter crap all day long. You know, people in offices, they sit there with their cream cakes and biscuits and all this. And we know it's happening because look at the size of them. Look at how ill they are, wandering around like great big puff monsters. It is ridiculous. And you see the pictures of people in the 60s and 70s. They were slim and they were much fitter because they ate sensibly and they weren't putting in all the extra chemicals that we now have in what people call food. It isn't food, it's just a chemical creation that looks like food. But, you know, people think it's food and they put it into them. They're duped, but I think a lot of people know it's not food, but they go, oh, yeah, but doesn't matter, it tastes nice, doesn't it? And so for the 1 or 2 seconds of taste, they'll poison their body for the 1 or 2 years that it's going to affect them and more. But anyway, that's just me saying it as it is. So that was that. So yesterday, what else? I had books to go down to the post office in the cold and the rain. I'm just trying to think now, because yesterday was a bit of a monster of a day. Everything was a challenge. Getting the internet sorted was a challenge. I can't even remember now the other things that we had to do that I had to do. Gosh, my brain's gone. But anyway, yesterday,
several trips down to the post office.
Yes, well, down into town. One second trip was to sort out the internet with the dongle and then ring up, not the dongle, the SIM card, and then chatting to them on the phone and getting it all going. And then once it's all go, then of course I could record a video. That's right. And then so everything was behind, but I couldn't upload a video. I hadn't filmed the video because I was trying to sort out the internet. So yes, so I'm sounding a bit where last night wasn't a great night for me. I had to get up in the middle of the night, so I'm a bit tired. I had to get up because just couldn't sleep, I think. Because my, you know, whilst this strange complaint is pretty much gone, as I have told everybody, and that's true, just at night time, it's still a lingering sort of compression on the shoulders and the muscles, and you get to that point where you just go, it's too sore to sleep, I need to get up. Anyway, I got up and I read a bit more of R.F. Delderfield, which was very enjoyable, I have to say. And it's interesting, I love his writing, because not only, you know, the way he phrases things, but I love the sort of very domestic nature of it, because it's such a great insight to how things were. He's writing about just before the Second World War in the mid to late 1930s. And I was reading about a wedding, and two of the characters obviously were getting married to each other. And it was this sort of, well, we can't be bothered. We're too old now to go to church and get married. And it was described going to the registry office as a conveyor belt, and that in 3 minutes, you know, they were through the service and out the other end, and another couple were lined up ready to go through this service. And you can kind of conjure it up in your mind. And then they were just having cold meat sandwiches at no reception hall hired. And just the sort of people from the avenue where they live. And I found that really interesting, you know, when you compare it to what people want now and what people demand now. And I think about my son, my eldest son, well, both my sons got married in quite extravagant ways. One was in Greece, I think, which is, you know, very slippery, of course. No, the country, obviously. But none of us went, apart from, I think, her mother. Her mum and dad. But, you know, it sprung on us a bit late because they had a date, and then they had an issue with the dogs that had to go to the vets that needed doing. And so a lot of money was spent on that. And then they changed the date, and then they just whisked off and said, oh, we're getting married. But my eldest son hired this estate through a wedding agency thing, this estate, and we all had to dress up in appropriate gear, which you would do if it was just a village church and stuff. But no, this was outside this very elegant old estate, sort of, I suppose, what would it be, originally a manor house that was done up over different, you know, Georgian period, whatever. Sprawling estate with lots of little outbuildings and things. Very beautiful and very magical, but cost him tens of thousands of pounds. I mean, I gave him some money, but I didn't have a lot of money to give him. And he must still be in debt to paying that off. And had people far and wide coming along. And now, you know, it's his choice, of course, and I'm not criticising him for his choice. I got wedded when I was married in a registry office just up the road. And my neighbour, because he had a car and I couldn't be seen, I suppose, you know, my ex-wife wouldn't really wanted me to just drive us up there. Because he had, what did he have? He had an old Citroen something, a little battered car. I asked him to be the best man so he could drive us up there. I mean, it was all very, very basic, incredibly basic, similar to what was described in the book, really, that I've been reading. And we went, I'd hired an old place where I used to have an office. I say office, it makes it sound grand. It was a dance studio and they had a little cubbyhole room that I turned into an office when I was doing my mime theatre stuff. And so that's where I would be sending off type letters to theatres to try and get us in to theatres. And I was receiving phone calls from agents to do extra work and TV walk-on parts and stuff, you know, so it wasn't like a glamorous office, it was more of a cubbyhole. But they had the dance hall and they had a little cafe there, and so I had my reception there. And again, it was a bit cold sandwiches. We brought all the food, nothing was really very hot. It was very, very sort of basic. And that was in the 1990, a long time ago, it would seem. It doesn't seem that long ago, but it was. And it's, I suppose I find it interesting how fashions change. I mean, you know, these elaborate weddings were for those people who could really afford it. But now young people are paying through the nose and getting themselves into huge debt by these companies that sell them fairy tales. My youngest son, bless him, and his good lady get into these fairy tales. They made videos, they had videos, they, you know, these very sort of romantic style videos that were made by production company for them. Memories forever, but somewhat false, you know, walking along the sea with all this music, and you just go, that it was almost like watching an AI video, really, in a way, before AI was as prevalent as it is now. And I wonder, actually, that'd be interesting, whether people will don't even have to go to these places and can just do it on AI, and you'll see them climbing mountains and walking wistfully through long grass, in, you know, not actually having to do it, but the AI can conjure it up and send it off and say, you know, this is part of our wedding thing. I don't know. But people are spending huge amounts of money. I mean, it's bad enough that they're being encouraged by the system to go to university and have a 40 grand debt or whatever it is when they come out with qualifications in ridiculous subjects and then no real work and ending up at B&Q or somewhere. And then trying to get on the ladder to own property, where the cost of housing now is just so ridiculously expensive that they can't, and they're all renting and house sharing, and that's of course putting them into tiny little rooms, and stress with all, you know, with everybody trying to get them to spend more and more and more, and then what with the just the simple cost of living, the fuel bills, and the utilities costing arms and a leg. I don't understand how people can survive. And when people tell me what they have to pay each month, just, you know, like in the mortgage and everything together, just and my, you know, my son has said, oh, I need to earn this, that and the other. I think, how do you earn that? I never earned that kind of money to pay here. I mean, my house when I bought it was 45,500 pounds, or was it 46? It was like something like that, and now it's probably, I don't know, it's just a terrace house, you know, it's a very basic terrace house. It's not in great condition, but so if it was in reasonable condition, like my neighbour, let's say, it's probably worth 300,000. You know, which is great if you didn't have to then go and buy somewhere else, but you go and buy somewhere else and it would just, you just, well, you couldn't afford it. I couldn't, you know, it's just ridiculous, the price. And young people are having to earn huge amounts of money. They, both of them are having to work. When I bought this, my wife Dawn didn't have to work. I was only doing extra work and working 3 or 4 days a week and able to pay the mortgage. I had it, it was 2% loaded, but even then I had days off, and I, you know, was practicing my juggling, unicycling, all of those sort of skills, and brought those skills up so I could go and do that kind of work. And then I started to do that kind of work at the corporate events and fun days and gala shows and, you know, little circuses that we toured round. And Dawn was at home and she got a little job at a playgroup looking after kids, which, you know, earned a pittance, but she had, it's a little pin money, I suppose. I mean, I was paying all the bills. But now, of course, you know, if one of those couple get ill, suddenly they can't afford everything. And the next minute they're on universal credit and they're owned by the government. And then you're in that black hole that you can't get out of. And it's awful. It's awful. I managed to pay off my mortgage some years ago. And the thought of having to earn enough to pay a mortgage now would just scare the living daylights out of me. I mean, I'm pretty much retired, really, I suppose, in my early 60s. But then, you know how I live. I don't have a Netflix account. I don't do Amazon Prime. I have very few. I mean, I buy a little bit of tobacco for my pipe. We burn logs. I don't have expensive gas and electricity bills. We live incredibly frugally. But actually, I embrace that. I embrace that. We don't go out to eat. If we do, it might be just a bag of chips down on the beach in the summer. It is what it is. And so when I was reading that RF Delderfield, it really sort of sprang home the differences of what people live like now. And they say, well, you know, I must live like this. We're all being told we can live like kings. And of course, people just max out on their credit cards and become more and more in debt. And then you've got the wolves at the door, the council acting like a mafiosi, kicking your door down if you don't pay your council tax and all these other things. If your dog deposits a poo on the pavement and you haven't got a bag on you, they'll claim that they've got authority over you to target you. If you park your car more than 5 minutes over the bloody time, they'll charge you huge amounts of money. And all these corporations and these private companies, these big private companies, I'm not talking about small family-run companies that have respect for people, I'm talking about the ones that don't give a toss for anybody, who, you know, will come after you, and they're all trying to get their profits up. It's just disgusting. And what's worse, I think, is that we let it happen. We don't en masse ever get together, and we've been divided. I mean, look how the vaccine has divided people, Brexit divided people, the government's stupid parties divided people. We need to, in my opinion, we would be better without government and without corporations, because they're just leeches, and they're leeching on us, ordinary everyday people, and keeping us down and keeping us from our aspirations. And I'm not talking about the aspirations to spend hundreds of thousands of pounds on one day on weddings. I'm talking about our aspirations to live an effective and joyous life. And instead, they've kept us down. And then you've got the pharmaceutical companies working hand in glove with the NHS, public enemy number one, who is there to ensure that you're ill rather than better. And they're all, again, another bunch of bastards. I sound bitter, don't I, this morning? I do. I appreciate it. But sometimes you just, you know, hold a mirror up and you look at the world and you go, this isn't right. We shouldn't be living like this. We should be joyous and happy and you know, helping one another instead of at each other's throats. But the cabal and the deep state and all of these bastards that have created this is coming to an end. I firmly believe that. I mean, I hope I'm going to be alive to see it. I hope that my children will see it and that they will realise that they've been under the thumb. They don't know. You know, they just go along with it. They think I'm raving mad. And they seem... This is the way the world is, so that's it. No sense of we need to change this. This isn't right. This isn't how we should live. No sense of what life could be other than working very hard within these rules that are set to squash you. And it just seems such a shame that they're blinded by the narrative. Anyway, yeah, so... That's it. But today, things going on today, and no doubt I'll tell you about them tomorrow because I've been speaking for 27 minutes or so, and I don't know whether any of that's resonated with you or you just think, well, that Vobes is just having a good old moan, and I suppose I am in some respects because it just seems unfair. It seems very unfair, and... We will break out of it. We've got to hold on to that positive thought that we will break out of this nonsense. And I do believe we are. I do honestly believe in my gut that we are. It's just we've got to hold on a little longer. And soon the sun will shine and these horrible, evil people will be rounded up and they'll get their comeuppance. They really will. But let's just hold our nerve a little longer. Thank you for listening. I will chat to you soon.